Hello, Looking Up listeners. This is once again Josh Elstro, editor and audio producer for Looking Up. In the interest of keeping our staff safe and healthy and help reduce the spread of COVID-19, I'm still the only member of the Looking Up team coming into the studios as we continue to quarantine until further notice. To stay connected to our listeners during this time, we're revisiting some of our favorite guests and episodes in the Looking Up library until we can return to safely producing new content in the studio. It's a great way for new listeners to get into the show, too. So whether revisiting or hearing it for the first time, we hope you enjoy Dean and Anna's December 2017 conversation with Paul Zaloom, although you may know him just as Beekman from Saturday morning kids show classic Beekman's World. Until we're able to return with brand new content, stay healthy, stay safe, and as Dean would say, keep looking up.
Hey, Anna, I know we got New Year's Eve coming up, but big stuff will be in the sky. We're going to have a full moon above Orion's head. You know the constellation of winter, Orion?
Uh-huh.
And full moon on New Year's Eve. Isn't that pretty cool?
You know what's pretty cool is doing other stuff on New Year's Eve, like drinking champagne and hanging out and having dance parties.
Oh, I see. That's how it's going to be.
Yeah, that's how it's going to be.
So you're not going to go outside in the freezing cold at midnight on New Year's Eve and look at the stars?
If I say yes, will you stop talking about this?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Good. I convinced you. You know how it always makes me feel good when I can reach out to the youth and convert the youth. Anyway, from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both in the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, the man a generation of 90s kids, including myself, know as Beekman from Beekman's World, Paul Zaloom, will join us.
So, Anna, you know, like, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little excited. I'm not sure what I'm feeling right now because Beekman is the man. Like, I cannot wait to talk to Beekman.
You're giddy.
And I mean, I know his real name is Paul Zaloom, but I'm going to just call
him Beekman.
I don't know. What am I going to do? I'm going to panic. He's like, I watch the show all the time. Like, you know, Bill Nye was one thing. He's like, okay, all right, Bill Nye. But Beekman was like the real deal. Like, I don't know what it was about his shtick, whatever it was.
Is it the cool accent?
It's the accent.
Like, he was kind of like
the in-your-face attitude, the hand
and
gestures.
Physically in-your-face camera work.
I mean, it was the way that they did stuff on the show. I don't know. They brought the scientific stuff home that I just was really appealed to me. I don't know. Which one was it for you that got you?
Yeah. That got me?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Definitely not a scientist, but I did like Beekman's World because it was crazy and zany and weird, and it wasn't too, like, I wasn't a natural science person, if you can believe that. I was more into, like, the craziness, so I really wanted that green lab coat.
Oh, yeah.
I love that lab coat. And I thought it was nice and short lessons. It was good, and I liked his accent. I thought it was cool.
It made
him sound like a...
I know. Yeah. He didn't sound like your normal scientist.
No, he really did not.
Or look like
him.
Or look like it, or act like it.
So you liked him more than Bill Nye.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Are you just saying that? What if we have Bill Nye on the show?
I will lie and tell him that I loved him even better than Beekman.
You'd be like, Beekman who?
Right. Oh, who's
ridiculous.
That guy?
I don't even know.
I mean, just, you know, no offense to Bill.
I'm just saying.
He was a little squarer, you know. He was squarer than Beekman was.
That's true.
I felt like, who... Isn't this like the president test? Which one would you rather have a beer with? I would rather have a beer with Paul Zaloom.
Oh, yeah.
He's got some stories, I'm sure.
Bill Nye, would. He's cool, though. I don't want to say anything about Bill Nye.
Burn any bridges.
No, it's true. Call us,
but,
Bill. Just kidding.
Now, the other guy that I watched a lot, this one is really obscure. I mean,
oh, God.
There's this guy on PBS called Julius Sumner Miller. And he did physics lessons that looked like he did it out of somebody's garage. Like he had a table set up on what looked to be old trash cans.
Are you serious?
And he had this white hair and this very strange way of talking. Mm. Look him up on YouTube, Julius Sumner Miller. And he did all these physics lessons that were... I mean,
on PBS?
Yeah. They would just like fill in weird hours. Like you never knew when it was going to be on. And I think we watched it in school, but you know, you're just like, who is this guy? And he knew his stuff about everything. Like,
was it all science, or was it just a guy that had a show about all kinds
science
of...
and physics? And okay. he did all these experiments about gravity and Bernoulli's principle and all sorts of physics experiments that he would just do. And so check him out. He
I'll
is.
To, I'll have to look him up.
He is pretty cool.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, now that you, as we've mentioned once or twice, are the co-host of Stargazers, a huge honor. Obviously.
Oh, thank you.
Did you watch Stargazers when you were a kid?
A little bit. That was
Were you like one day?
One someday.
That show.
That guy
on a fake flying saucer.
I know that guy sits on the rings of Saturn with the toupee and the mustache. Someday. If I'll get that kind of hair, I'll do that.
To be fair, your hair does look real.
Oh, that's good. It is. It is. Thank you. We have better wig people there now. But yeah, I don't know what I thought. I'll be honest. I'm not sure what I thought about that show. I thought this guy is a little off the wall. Like, he might be a little over the top for even me. But it was just one of those shows that you're always watching right at the end of the day. Like, mm-hmm. Stargazers always came on like at midnight or 2 a.m. or something like that. It was one of those things where, yeah, when it came on, you're like, whoa, what's the deal with this guy? Like, he did reel you in with his kind of routine.
Right.
But it wasn't one of those things where I would, like, go out of my way to see it. But when I did see it, it was one of those cool little appetizers, I guess. Yeah. You'd get the kind of interested in the sky from it.
And then you're like, where's Julius?
Right. Yeah. Now I want to look up Julius. That's right. What about some of the other ones? Did you watch like Magic School Bus?
If Miss Frizzle was a real person and we were able to talk to her, it would be, now I think Paul is really exciting, but that, I loved Magic School Bus, and they're redoing Magic School Bus. Everything
really?
From my childhood is like, they're just whipping it back around. Next they're going to be remake Saved by the Bell or something. But anyway, they're remaking, fingers crossed. Remaking Magic School Bus with Kate McKinnon from SNL. But I loved how colorful it was and how she, Miss Frizzle, just all crazy. And it was like, I just thought it was like a really fun, you know, show. And it was really engaging. And it was hard to keep my attention as a kid.
Wow. So that's going to be coming out soon?
I don't know. I just read about it and I was like, I wanted to be annoyed. Like, how dare they like redo it? And I was like, just too excited to be mad. I'm here for it.
Everything's getting kind of redone, you know?
It's true.
It's like we don't have any other ideas or something. Like, let's just keep doing
or all
Stargazers
the good ideas.
Again.
I mean, that's right. We'll just recycle
We'll just do that, yeah.
That's right.
Anyway, God bless them for doing that. That's for sure.
So, did Neil deGrasse Tyson have a show?
Not in the similar kids way. I mean, Cosmos,
he was too busy
of course.
Trying to like kill Pluto.
Right. Yeah. He is busy with Pluto killing and things like that. And
other things on his mind.
But, I mean, Cosmos is kind of the thing, but it wasn't necessarily geared for kids as much. And so that would be interesting to see him do a kids show. I mean, imagine him as Beekman. You know, that would be pretty cool. Like,
that would be cool.
He'll pull out his New York accent and that would be
I could see him actually being a good Beekman.
I know.
I feel like.
What about you? Would you be an assistant? You know, like, you know, Beekman had those three different assistants over those years. I could see you.
Do you know what I'm going to say right now? I could be Beekman.
Well,
what
know
is
that.
This assistance? Come on. Just because I'm kind of. The assistant on the show.
No, you're
no,
not.
No, I'm
you're
not.
You're the star.
Let's be
you're
honest. The they said I was hilarious on the radio the other day.
They did. You've been rated higher than me, that's for sure. So,
well, you know, Dean, it's a team effort.
Everybody's like, more Anna, more Anna.
That's right. Exactly.
Anyway, well, with all that, you're great and all, but let's talk to Paul. How about that?
Let's do it.
For 6 years, our guest portrayed Beekman on the popular kids show Beekman's World. At its peak, it was seen in 90 countries and as part of the CBS Saturday morning lineup. I mean, imagine that. It was in the Saturday morning.
Crazy.
During the show, Beekman and his assistants performed scientific experiments in a totally fun way.
And now, the one you've heard about, the one you've been waiting for, the quarterback of questions, the King Kong of knowledge, the Duke of discovery, the giantest of scientists, the Elvis of experimentation, the B-Man himself. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you the one and only...
me, Beekman, and you've just broken into Beekman's World.
Beekman!
It's a real pleasure to welcome Paul Zaloom to Looking Up. Well, Paul, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, I mean, Beekman's World was like the show for me growing up. And so how do you describe it to people? For folks that maybe haven't seen it, how do you describe it? How do you describe your role on that?
I would describe it maybe as like Soupy Sales does a science show.
Yeah.
Soupy.
I always, you have like a gangster voice, or like you're like the science Andrew Dice Clay or something like that. Like, did he get stuff from you, or did you get stuff from him?
Well, actually, the guy that directed the show, Jay Dubin, did a few HBO specials with Andrew Dice Clay.
I did notice that.
Jay is a like Dems and Does, Brooklyn guy from the old neighborhood, and so that had an influence on the character. I was born and raised in New York, and when I get worked up, we'd have meetings with the executive producer, Mark Waxman, and Jay, and different people there. And when I get worked up talking about the show, this is before the character existed. I start waving my hands around, getting all excited, and my New York accent comes out a little bit more.
It's coming out. It's coming out since we just started talking.
It's true.
I can definitely hear it. And so,
oh my gosh, so exciting.
So how did they pick you? What was the process? Did you audition and what were they thinking? Like, I didn't mean it that way. What were they thinking? They picked you. That's not what I meant.
Okay, let Dean read. He's just nervous, excited. Let him rephrase.
Sorry about that. Yes. How were they so insightful that they chose you? A great actor to play Beacon.
What were they thinking?
Damn, you caught that. Oh, well.
Yeah. Well, I think what the story is that they looked in Hollywood. They auditioned a lot of people, and they ended up just with a lot of like sitcom dad types. They couldn't find anybody weird enough. And so the director, Jay Dubin, had been hired to do the show. And he said, I know this guy in New York. And I'm a puppeteer. That's my background. And my training is what I've been doing all my life, is puppet shows for adults, political satire and comedy, using all different kinds of puppets, found objects and hand puppets, rod puppets, shadow puppets, you name it, all that stuff. So he had seen my stuff in New York, and we had tried to pitch doing a HBO thing. There were a couple of places that hadn't been successful with that, but he remembered me and he said, what about this guy? I had a show about food processing where I played a food processor and I wore a chef's toque and a lab coat. And it was basically about all the disgusting stuff that's in food, chemicals, wood. They put wood in food, and there's stuff, food additives you have to store carefully because it'll blow up if you're not careful with it.
Oh my gosh, what?
All right, we don't want to know about that.
Wait a minute, that's scary. Yeah.
Continue.
It's all the good foods, I bet, too.
Yeah. So anyway, I had a video of me doing that, and because the guy, wears a lab coat, they were like, oh, this is the guy. So they flew me out, and I did an audition, and in the middle of it, they had some props. It was a beaker with some water in it, and I knocked it over, and being, a live performer, I ad-libbed, you learn something goes wrong, you ad-lib, otherwise you look like an idiot, and the civilians go for that, when you ad-lib, it's like magic to them. It's like, how did that guy do that? They just pulled it out of the hat. And so I splashed water around and made like cologne with it and blah, blah, blah. And I got the job.
Wow. That's just amazing. It's, cause like when I was watching these shows, Bill Nye was on and you were on and, I was definitely a Beekman guy. Bill Nye had his thing, but
he's not just saying that. He did tell me, he's like, I was always a Beekman guy.
Oh,
I was
like,
okay.
You were cool. You were
the green lab coat. Are you kidding? Yeah, it's
the super hair, cool. The hand movements. I was wondering, because all the shots, you guys are like really close together. Was the camera like 1 foot from your face at all times?
Yeah, a foot, foot and a half, 2 feet, and never farther away.
Yeah,
except very rare occasions, and the camera never moved. It never zoomed in. It never boomed. It never did any of that stuff, except in the opening credits or whatever. But Jay, he had two cameras actually that were 2 feet from our faces. They were touching the two cameras.
Are you serious?
Ultra wide angle lenses.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah, they had ultra wide angle lenses on them, so that they're like one step down from a fisheye lens. So they're kind of distorted to begin with. And instead of the cameras moving to give, you know, to create motion, the performers would move back and forth from camera to camera. And, you know, nothing has been really shot like that in TV. You know, where we had very elaborate choreography where when it was a two shot or a three shot, we'd always be pulling each other in and out of frame to the other camera and doing this kind of dance that was hard to learn at first, but then after a while it became kind of instinctive, like how, you know, just how you animate the frame.
And you did all these experiments, and I mean, how many times were you smacked in the head by Lester's ears? I mean, it was like you turn and his ears are always there. This is your lab rat that's in the studio with you.
Yeah, that's funny. You're reminding me that did happen quite a bit.
So did you?
He was.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say he was always very apologetic whenever that happened. You know, Mark Ritz is really the sweetest guy in the world and incredibly talented. And he and I got along really, really well and really loved each other. And he was a force to be reckoned with on that show because he was so talented that it was it was like having a whip cracking on your hiney that you had to keep your level of participation and you're paying attention and everything pretty high. He just really set a really, really high standard. And wonderful, lovely, loving, incredible guy and funny as hell.
So do you have, I guess this is maybe a harder question or to narrow it down, but do you have like a favorite episode or just favorite memory, maybe even from the show, or is it just the whole thing was great?
Well, I remember the snot episode as being particularly fun.
Oh yeah, it's always something gross, right?
Yeah, and I mean, Jay said to me it was very early on in the show, and he said, "How would you do snot?" And I said, "Oh, I would make like a corridor that would be the nostril, and then go exploring like an astronaut." And he got the idea of using a sonotube instead, you know, a cardboard tube that's used to pour foundations for buildings. And they just got a giant sonotube and they put bubble wrap in it and then $700 worth of Hollywood special effects snot and coated the inside of this thing in the snot. And they put broom bristles at the end of it for the nasal hairs. Oh, and then made a hatch. So it was like a NASA thing where I'm going into, you know, a space shuttle or whatever. So that was fun. It was amusing. And they actually took a five when I was stuck in that thing. And they forgot about me.
They just left you in the nostril.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they left me in there. I don't know why that happened, but I know the executive producer, Mark Waxman, he was up in his office and he could hear the live feed from the stage. And they were all off having coffee or a smoke or something in the yard there. And I'm in there saying, can someone help me out of here? I'm kind of stuck and it's a little stuffy. It's a little hard to breathe. And he started panicking. He just went completely crazy. They left the talent in there. He's going to croak.
You should have sneezed at him. That's what I would have got their attention.
Well, one of the things I learned, I did learn after a while when they used to dump slime on me, for whatever reason, you know, it was big in those days. It was a big Nickelodeon thing, dumping slime on people. And the crew would think this is hilarious. And they would just think. So I learned that what I could do is after they dumped it, if I made hand gestures, like really big hand gestures, which I did anyway, but made sudden stops with them, the slime would keep going off my hands and would hit all the Weisenheimers and the crew.
Yeah, that would show. Let me get them back.
Yeah, and I did that. I did that.
Well, the one, the episode that really kind of stands out to me is the toilet episode. Like, you described in great detail how a toilet works, which sounds like it would be the worst thing to describe on television. Like, but it was really entertaining. I mean, you go through the whole parts and where everything goes and how it works. And I mean, that had to have been a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that was fun. I have some great photos of me and Jay in the toilets, and I think we sang a song, and the rat was like eating the toilet paper. it was disgusting. But you know, the thing is, like, that kind of stuff is, you know, kids love that stuff, and it's the bodily function stuff is kind of a point of entry to introduce kids to different ideas in science. Because they're really interested in the snot and barf and farting and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It still works.
Yeah. So we thought, well, let's use that as a way to, explain what's going on. As I always said, you know, we wanted to explain that snot is not just a between meal snack, but, you know, it traps dirt and germs going into your body.
Oh my gosh.
Good life lessons. That's there, right. Paul. That's really good.
So we understand that you have a big following in Latin America and Mexico, and that there's still, you know, there's big fans of the show still here. But can you share maybe like one of the more memorable times you were recognized, or an interaction with a fan, or just a little anecdote about an experience like that?
Well, I had gone to Brazil to do a gig. I had been invited there to, there was a publishing conference, and I noticed that people were pretty interested in Beekman. You know, there were a number of people at the press conference and stuff, but it was only at a subsequent, event where I was invited to play at, UNAM, which is the biggest university in Latin America, and it's based in Mexico City. And they said, oh, we want you to come for the 75th anniversary of the physics department. And I was like, sure. And they said, well, we'll have you play in a 600-seat theater. And then they got back and said, let's make it 800 seats. I said, okay. Then they said, actually, we want to add a show. I'm like, okay. And then they said, actually, we want to take it outside, because they kept getting more and more demand for tickets.
Wow. So
wow.
I said, how many people outside? And they said, about 6,000 people could fit.
Whoa.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So they ended up adding two more shows, and I played for at least 18,000 people.
Wow.
And the mayor of Mexico City showed up for the show. And the American ambassador summoned me to a meeting at the embassy while I was there. And, yeah, it was just, and you know, I met the mayor backstage and this whole thing, and it was a really big stage, and the crowd was, you know, went crazy. And I realized at the time that there's some circumstances where, you know, I need security to get in and out of places, and I've had crowds like block traffic. And
so did you have a police escort
really?
Entourage? And
I have, yeah. And people running alongside the car and all that kind of jazz.
Oh my gosh.
And wow. You know, I always wondered, well, you know, why? I don't really get it. I mean, and I ask people all the time down there, what is it? And they say, oh, well, you explain science so well. Or this show's funnier. There's nothing like it on TV. And I understand. Okay, yeah, it is very unique. It had a unique look, and they didn't have much good children's programming down there.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't explain the kind of emotional reaction that people have. And I think what it is the fact that the character is that close to the camera, talking directly to the audience, that it made a very strong emotional connection with kids. And kids don't distinguish between somebody on the TV talking to them and someone in the room talking to them. It's all on kind of the same plane. So they develop a very strong emotional reaction and connection to the character in a way that is not common in the States. I mean, it happens with some people, but it's not like down there. I mean, people are, and there's millions and millions and millions of these people who saw the show and who loved the show.
Well, it's great. It's well deserved. I mean, you got a big fan right here in this room, at least.
Two of them. Okay. I watched it too.
And Anna too, right?
Gee, yeah. Just because I'm not an astronomer now. I mean, I did. I loved the show. It was great. Jeez.
Well, Paul,
you know, it was a lot of fun to do, and I'm very grateful for the fact that the show has had such a strong reception. You know, people tell me all the time, I'm a scientist because of you. I'm a teacher or a doctor. I'm an astrophysicist because of you. And often they'll say, you must be tired of hearing that. And I tell them, I'll never get tired of hearing that I'm a scientist because of you. I mean, you just can't beat that.
That's awesome.
Well, Paul, thanks so much for talking with us today. This was a lot of fun. It's a great honor to meet you.
Well, thanks so much. It was my pleasure and honor to be with you folks today.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've been talking with Paul Zaloom, the actor who portrayed Beekman on Beekman's World. Thanks so much for joining us, Paul.
Well, as you can imagine, with all the outreach talks that Dean gives and all the kids who come to visit the observatory, we get lots of great questions. And we get some questions I think that maybe adults are curious about, too. It's possible. And so we're going to answer one now.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes. And this is one I have not heard. I don't know what this is. I have no idea.
That's right.
I probably don't know the answer.
You're overselling it. They're going to be like, oh, she definitely told him. Like, you're like, I have no idea what this is.
Okay. No idea. Who are you?
Where did you get in here? What year is it?
What year?
Okay. So the question is, how do they eat in space?
Oh, that is a good question.
That's a good question.
I know. And we just had Scott Kelly in here.
That's right.
The astronaut that was in space for almost a year.
Well, we covered some other sensitive topics with Scott about space life. So
that's true.
This one is just a little more basic, but, inquiring minds.
I know. I asked the Beekman questions to Scott about how to use the bathroom in space.
Exactly.
A very important thing.
Space plumbing.
Again, inspired by Beekman.
But, that's right.
Okay, so back to this question. So how do they eat in space? So how do they eat, like, when they're in the space station? Or,
yeah, I think
when
it's like a zero gravity thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so that is a big problem because you can't just, like, put your food on a plate and eat it with a fork because you put it on the plate and then it starts floating off the plate.
Do they have, like, microwaves and stuff?
They do have microwaves.
Okay.
And that's usually how they heat up everything, is they put it on the microwave, heat it up. But it's not, like, it's not free, floating. It is in tubes. So pretty much all the food is in tubes and packages. And you microwave it to heat it up if you want, or add hot water to it. And then you either slurp it through straws or squeeze it into your mouth or eat it out of the bag very quickly, but you're pretty much eating out of bags all the time.
How do you add the water to it?
You inject it in there.
Oh my
gosh. So you can inject hot water in there.
This is intense.
Yeah, because you can't pour things.
Right. So like, how would you, add ramen, let's say, a cup of ramen, you just like add.
Yes.
It's weird.
So yeah, and anything that gets out of the package starts floating around you. And so at first it's kind of fun because you have like, let's say you have a Cheeto, it's floating around there, and you can eat the Cheeto. You just float over to it and just bite on it.
Yeah, or someone else can be like, dibs.
Right.
whoever
gets it first.
Exactly.
Yep.
Okay.
So you got to be careful of all this stuff. But liquids are the big problem. If it floats out there, it turns into a sphere and then it'll just float around. And you got to get it before it hits any equipment.
Oh.
So that's the big thing. And I think Scott was telling us about that, they found this juice box or something like that that had been missing for four years that they found it on the space station.
Right.
It's because, like, when stuff floats away, it just, like, kind of hides.
Because I always think about it going up, like, but it goes wherever.
Anywhere.
It kind of just goes where it goes.
There's no up and down.
Yeah.
So,
there is no up or down.
So eating is fun for a little while, but it starts getting...
You're like, get back here, Cheeto.
Exactly. I mean, your food's flying away from you. The other thing that the astronauts have said is that everything in space doesn't taste as much.
Oh,
as well
I didn't
as
think about
things.
That.
And it's because they're weightless, and so their sinus cavities are all congested. It's like you have a head cold almost all the time you're in space. So everything that they have is very bland.
Oh.
And the hottest commodity to have if you're going to be cooking anything is hot sauce. You put hot sauce on everything.
And it could clear your sinuses.
It'll clear your sinuses.
I feel like
right
that's a double duty right there.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the big thing is, bring your hot sauce when you go up
that's
there
hilarious.
Or some kind of salsa, condiments, all sorts of things.
Yeah. Nice. That was a good question, I feel like.
I like it.
I learned a lot. I mean, it's not my question.
Right.
It really was not, but I did learn a lot.
Very good question. Keep them coming.
That's right. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Paul Zaloom, the man also known as Beekman, for joining us. Get in touch with Looking Up. We want to hear from you. We're on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org. We also started a Facebook page at facebook.com/lookingupwvxu.
I can't believe it. I talked to Beekman.
You're like on cloud nine.
And you can ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask Beekman, I mean Dean, or an astronomer or scientist, and we'll answer it on a future episode.
Oh, man. And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes and rate us there or on Stitcher. You can also catch episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Rick Andrus is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.